Ellis off to the side of the score. Are they wiping it out?
No.
Okay, I thought I saw the referee with his arms extended.
It was a bouncing puck, is kept in from Ryan Ellis. It bounced for a little bit before it got kicked out to Forsberg. A rolling puck. He went up over the glove, far side. A quick shot. Referee did signal something. I don't know what it was, Pete.
Third goal is on the board, so the Predators have tied it up with 31-plus seconds remaining. Demers for Ekman-Larsson. His shot, that one blockered away by Jussi Saros. Hinostroza picks it up right side for the Coyotes. Banks it back toward Demers. Returns to Hinostroza, top of the circle. And the puck deflected in the net! Richardson was there for the game winner. And the Predators' season has come to a conclusion. The goal at 5:27 of the overtime. Crazy bounces. That's how it goes.
Good morning, Nashville. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford in for Robbie Stanley today. Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson behind the glass. And boy, Joe, we have plenty of sports to talk about. There's so much news going on in sports over the weekend.
We've got some stuff today, don't we? We've got stuff going on.
College football on the unfortunate brink of cancellation. The Nashville Predators out of the Stanley Cup qualifiers. The NHL draft lotteries today, which could mean good news potentially for the Nashville Predators. And just so many things continue to happen in what is a loaded August of sports news, it seems.
Yeah, it's the best August ever. In terms of sports, I have never seen anything like this. We've never had anything like this. But now you throw in the college football thing, and then you're reminded of why we're having the best August ever and why it's the worst year ever.
2020, man. I'm not liking it at all, but we have so much to talk about today in the show. Nashville Predators, what's next for them? What could be next? What should be next? Obviously, we're going to talk college football. Chris Doering of the SEC Network. We have Corey Curtis coming on. We're going to talk TSSAA as well. High school sports getting ready to start back up later this week, and especially with soccer and football here locally. So we have Matthew Gillespie, the assistant executive director of the TSSAA, Darren McFarlane, Darren Donick and Chase coming on, and Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. So the full gamut of sports talk today coming for you to get you caught up in everything going on. But we're going to talk about the Preds, because that is the big news here locally in Nashville over the weekend, losing to the Arizona Coyotes in four games, meaning there's only one game last night to secure it, Columbus and Toronto, and props to Columbus,
man,
for setting up more conspiracy theories for the NHL draft lottery today. Three teams would be a conspiracy theory if they get the number one pick, but the Nashville Predators losing out, and it was an interesting post-game press conference from the players that didn't seem too downtrodden on this. They felt like they were the better team overall, but the better team didn't win, and so now we have to look at what's next for this team.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, look, I understand some of – first of all, I think Ryan Ellis was largely making the point that he feels like there's a change under John Hines, and they like where that's going. Could have taken a little bit of shade toward Laviolette, too, if you wanted to, but, you know, you can interpret things different ways. Like, Roman Josi made the point that, you know, this compared to last year, they were a lot more competitive. And that's fine, but that was also, I think, a better team they played last year, right? You need to beat Arizona. That's my thing. So you'd like to see more of that from them. It's also a weird situation where they're up in Edmonton, and so we're asking questions from thousands of miles away, and it's not like you're in the locker room and really getting the reaction. It's sort of now everyone has been brought out to the podium. So you don't want to make too much of that, but I will say, Justin, that independent of that, I do think that this team could use a jerk or two that it doesn't have right now. A jerk is just – I mean, that's just my word for it, but a little bit more edge somewhere.
Okay, a person that's a jerk. I don't know if you meant a jerk as in yanking the chain out from some layers as well.
Yeah, noun. Yeah. Person jerk.
So the thing that gets me – and yes, completely different situation – but this was not the Stanley Cup playoff qualifiers of moral victories. Moral victories aren't enough for this team right now with expectations that are on this team, given, yes, the run from 2017, but they progressed downwards, and we'll discuss that later in the show too. But the expectations are there for a good reason, given how much money's been invested in this team, how much the contract that David Poile has given some of these players. You have two $8 million centers. One of them showed up during the playoffs, one of them did not. And just the expectations of you have this much talent, this much veteran leadership on this team as well. The expectation should be there for a deep run. everybody knows it's tough to win the Stanley Cup. If only one team survives for that. But the expectations for a deep run, at least making the playoffs, should have been there. So moral victories is not what you want out of this team right now. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, moral victory. Yay, we made a push for the playoffs. Here, not even making it out of the qualifiers. And yes, Arizona was an underachieving team. They underperformed during the season. They've dealt with injuries. They added Taylor Hall in the season as well. But it's still not an excuse, especially when they played better for the majority of the series, for them to lose the way they did. Not even pushing it to five games. That is a frustrating part there, too, is that they weren't even able to push it to five to get them to the brink. Now, granted, only one series did go to the brink, and best of five is weird sometimes. But the expectations are there for a good reason.
Yeah, and I think I also think some of the, you know, the being satisfied with the performance does speak to the whole season with these guys. I mean, look, we talked about it all year. They were very frustrating to watch. I think they were frustrated. A lot of them didn't perform. You mentioned one of the two centers showing up. See, Ryan Johansson, I look at this series and I'm like, wow, that's the guy. But then you also say, imagine if 75% of that shows up 75% of the time during the regular season, and are they not even in the qualifying round? See, so you can look back at that too. But I think the bottom line for me, Justin, is something needs to change on a significant level. I don't know what that is. There are some moves you can make, and there are a couple, you know, free agents who may be moving on, but I think there's some TBD move out there that probably has to, and I assume will, take place this summer to shake things up.
This fall?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. We're almost done with the summer.
It's so weird to think that the free agency is going to be in October.
Around Halloween?
Yeah. Oh, spooky. So playoff performers, at least. So we mentioned Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, overall, Victor Arvidsson. The Jofa line. The top line did what they were supposed to do in these playoffs. Well, the qualifiers. It's tough to call them the playoffs when they didn't make the round of 16.
But
so they
technically, this counts, right?
This counts
as like playoff stats, and they made the playoffs. But yes,
in reality,
they did not make the round of 16. So
Ryan Ellis, I feel like overall had a good series too. He seemed like he elevated his game, especially compared to the Dallas series last year where he basically got manhandled by Jamie Benn. So I think there are guys that did step up, but you didn't have the depth scoring that you needed overall. I mean, the top line can't do everything in a series like this. And so, I mean, the expectations were that the second line was going to be that, quote-unquote, depth scoring, and you didn't get much from Duchesne until the very end. I mean, the last game he finally made up for his big mistake, but you needed more from him the entire series. I mean, to the point where even people were calling for scratching him.
Yeah, they were.
They were. Chris Martel. So,
Martel.
Love you, buddy. But that's where they needed to step up, and they just didn't, which incites some changes that could be made. Now, Saros, we know there was plenty of people on both sides of this, whether Saros or Rene, who should have started game three, what was going on here, and that chart, and I know we've both seen as well in terms of goals expectation.
Not good.
To me, Saros played average and at times above average and made some saves when he needed to, but he didn't steal any games. He wasn't playing like he was going to steal a game. Like Darcy Kuemper stole games.
Yeah, the last two games, yeah. Kuemper was unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's what we want to look at in the playoffs is who's going to steal a game. And it's nothing against Yusuf Saros, is that he played well enough for a team to win. If the offense had shown up and buried some of their chances, he obviously played well enough for this team to win, but the offense didn't give him any help when it comes to that. When you're only scoring one goal, only Pekarinen is scoring goals for this team as a goaltender, not Yusuf Saros yet. So you can't rely on him to always steal those games. Is it within him? He's still young, potentially could be there. But I don't think the result of the series would have been any different if Pekarinen had played, because Pekarinen's numbers overall were fairly pedestrian in the regular season. We can speculate all we want,
yeah.
But it's tough to see that when the offense isn't scoring goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I agree with John Hines what he said, and he was that question probably got him a little bit irritated. It was, look, the goaltending wasn't the problem. I agree, and I agree with the decision to go with Saros every game. I think you could have made a case as some kind of a psychological jump start to go with Rene. And look, I think we said this last week. I believe it. And until Saros shows me something different, I'll continue to believe it. I think Rene has a higher ceiling. There's no doubt. We have not seen Saros do things that Rene has done. I also think he has a lower floor. I think Rene, to me, was when you play a team that you shouldn't beat, maybe he's the guy who can steal it for you. But you should win this series with Saros in goal, and you should have. I do think that long-term, Justin, you look at him, and you're right, he's young, but I think it's been pretty consistent. He's a good goalie. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he's going to be a great goalie. I haven't seen anything that like a Vezina candidate kind of goalie. And so then what does that mean for the future? I think that's – like you mentioned Ellis. I want to get to that real quick. I agree. Like the two passes he made, unbelievable, right? I mean, the last play to Forsberg, but then also the pass to Arvidsson. Offensively, I thought he was lethal in the series. But I still thought in the defensive zone – he left something to be desired, too. I mean, some of that is, like, the reality of his body at times, you know. But I still think we're going to talk mostly about forwards with this team in this – I'm sorry, in the fall, off-season fall. But I do think, like, the defensive zone, you know, the defense core and the goaltending shouldn't be ignored here because there are some problems there, too.
There absolutely are, and I know in the next segment we'll talk about what's next, changes to keep the potential window open for the Nashville Predators. And mentioning that too, Pecorini, I agree, especially we haven't seen that steal-a-game type of thing. Rene, especially in the regular season before in the past, we've seen the athletic ability of a big, tall, lanky goaltender just flash to where he can steal a game and make those tremendous saves. Saros has a little bit of that in him, but nowhere near the Pecorini standards. And I get people being upset. Because Pecorine, most people that are fans probably don't know anything different. I mean, the last goaltender to start in the playoffs for the Predators before Saros and Rene was Dan Ellis. That was a long, long, long time ago in the scope of the Predators' history.
Yeah.
And so I get why people are upset, Pecorine being the face of this franchise for so long. But I do agree with Hines' decision overall. Now, I did even tweet it out during Game 4, as soon as that second goal was scored, put in Rene. But it wasn't necessarily because of Saros, is because that team needed a jump start psychologically more than anything else. And we've seen it happen with Columbus when they made their comeback from down 3-0, switched the goaltender, boom, and it jump starts the team. As most know, hockey fans especially, changing the goaltender isn't always the goaltender's fault. It's a lot of times the team in front to spark them of, hey, you guys need to help out your goaltender because you're leaving him out to dry. And that's what they were doing so many times, it seems, just in blown defensive coverage as well. So that's where I would have seen Rene, but now the Predators answered pretty quickly.
And Matt Duchene, by the way, was one who provided the spark.
Right.
Which is another, like, his stretch there. It was like, okay, where's that?
Yeah, where's
more
it been?
More often.
Yeah, where's it been? Regular season and playoffs.
But I give him credit for at least responding to what happened in Game 3.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, up next, we're going to talk about what some changes could be made for the Nashville Predators to keep that window open, potential trades, player contracts we want to keep open or let them walk. All that up next here in Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Question for Roman. A couple years ago, you guys lost after the Winnipeg series and said, hey, we all want to come back. We want to do this together. You guys have been together as a core group. Now that you've had a couple disappointing seasons or endings to follow that, do you guys feel like you want to bring this group back for next year, or do you think that this core group needs a change?
No, I think this playoffs series feels a lot different than last year. I think last year against Dallas, we were on the heels for most of the series, and we definitely didn't deserve to win that one. And I actually thought this year we were on attack, even the first game. I mean, obviously, we didn't have a good first period, but I thought throughout the games, we attacked and we kept pressuring, we kept shooting pucks. And so this series definitely feels a lot different. And to your question, I mean, I love our core. I love my teammates, and there's definitely a lot of belief in our room.
And welcome back to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson about to break. Man, so many about to break.
Munson likes to torment me by playing the questions of other people, but not mine. Now, I am glad you played that one, though, because a great opportunity to rip Jared Stillman here. So, you know you get one question, maybe, on these Zoom calls. And Stillman fancies himself the best question asker in Nashville media. I mean, he has said that many times. So Jared, Do you think that Roman's going to say, yeah, man, we got to break this group up? Nah, we're done with this group. Let's break it up. You might want to trade me, in fact. Trade me away. Like, what do you think they're going to say to that question, Jared Stillman? My gosh. All right, that's enough. And a little bit of emotion bubbling today. So
you feel better now?
I feel a little better.
All right.
Cool. I hope he was listening.
I'm still not playing one of your questions, but good good job.
That's
glad
fine.
You got that out the
that's
way.
Fine. Yeah. I hope Jared is working out and taking video to put on Instagram and listening to us rip him right now.
And you can listen to Jared and the GM.
That's right.
Daily from 2 to 6 here on ESPN 1025 The Game.
Well
all
done.
Right. So changes, though. Now, we can answer those questions of what we would like to see change for this Predators team. And there's opportunity to do that easily with expiring contracts. I mean, that's the first thing right there that you can do for changes is let some contracts expire and guys walk. And I think there's opportunity, especially in the forward unit, where we obviously see a need for shakeup. There's a shakeup, I think, needed in the third pairing. There's a lot of ways because we see this team being the second oldest team in the Stanley Cup qualifying round. That's not the makings of success in what we see out of Stanley Cup winners. Most of the time in the Stanley Cup winner, you're seeing a good mix of veteran leadership and a lot of guys on their ELCs, a lot of young guys that are right. just playing out of their mind where you know they're going to earn a huge contract to where the team's going to have to sell them off, Chicago, to Atlanta, right after they win the Stanley Cup. That's the makings of success right here because you have a good mix of guys playing outside their contract where they know they're going to get a 300% boost and then veterans that know what it's like to win and lose. I mean, we're seeing a little bit out of the Chicago Blackhawks right now with what they did to the Edmonton Oilers, where you have old guys, comparatively, in sports terms, and a lot of young guys.
Some young guys coming of age for them.
Yeah, and so this team needs more of that. And so some of the few things I'm looking at for changes, Joe, is the third pairing, I'd love to see go young. Give these guys that have been brewing and getting seasoning in Milwaukee have an opportunity. And, yeah, it's kind of thrown them to the wolves, but they've been in the system long enough. They've been in this organization long enough that I think is ready to help them make that jump. I'm looking at a Frederick Allard, an Alex Carrier, guys like that. And if you want to add a perma-scratch veteran D guy that's cheap in the offseason, okay, do that. But the thing is, Jared Tenorti, which I believe has one more year, wasn't really working, and he could be that perma-scratch for the time being to step in. But I really was hoping in the playoffs to see a change made to let Dan Hamhuis come in for Tenorti, at least for one game, because of some of the mental blips that happened that you saw. And I think Hamhuis, even though he's a slower, older guy, positioning-wise would have been a little bit better, just because given his veteran leadership of what he's experienced throughout his whole career, I think position-wise he would have been a little bit better off in there. But I want to go young. I want this team to go young and give these guys an opportunity to get more experience. And we saw Dante Fabbro. He had some mistakes, but he's come of age so much playing with Matias Ekholm, getting thrown to the wolves. And sometimes you just need that. They're going to progress.
Yeah, he made a mistake on the winning goal.
Yeah.
You know, and he made a mistake on the winning goal in the game before. So it's certainly been bumpy for him, and which was very predictable after last year when it was like, wow, look at this kid. But he was in the third pairing, and that's a progression. And when you take these jumps sometimes, you're going to have those rough patches. But I still think he's going to be fine. I think you make great points there on going young defensively. Going young in general is another question. Like, how many of these forwards are ready to step up? Some of them, it's like when they're ready to be in the top six, then they're ready. I thought, by the way, on Carrier, just watching camp, I really liked some of what he was doing out there.
Yeah, I like Alex Carrier. I really want him to get an opportunity, and he's had a taste. He's had that little bit of a taste in the NHL, which keeps him hungry. You want to keep him hungry by giving that little bit of a taste out there. But now in the forwards, you have expiring contracts for Mikael Granlund, Craig Smith, Colin Blackwell. Blackwell I'd like to see return, especially because I think cheap-wise, you have him on the bottom line and as a possible scratch. At this point, Craig Smith, only if he's taking a discount. Because
yeah, he's not making $4.25,
no.
$4.25 million anymore.
And then Granlund, at this point, you let him walk because things didn't work out. If you made a little bit of a run and you see, okay, things are working, then you try to re-sign him. But you have to make some room for some of these guys that you've been letting have an opportunity. Like Philip Tomasino, the expectations are that he can come in and be a middle six guy, which I can believe that. We didn't get to see him at camp, But we know that he was present for a lot of these on-ice sessions and just getting more and more experience with some of the guys in the team. And he's to that point, similar to what Ryan Ellis had going on for him, similar to what Seth Jones had going on for him in junior. There's not much more he can do in juniors, and he also cannot go to Milwaukee. To clear that up for a lot of folks, like, just put him in Milwaukee. Well, he's per the agreement with the Canadian Hockey League and the NHL, he's not of age yet to go there because then he'd be getting nitpicked from the junior team. So he has to play juniors of the NHL.
So to take that to the next step then, if he is with the Predators next year, the impact on the expansion draft is? Because this is where I get confused on that too.
He would automatically be protected.
He would still be protected. Yeah. So that's key.
Oh, very key. I mean, we're already looking forward to that. And I'm trying to temper a lot of what folks are asking. Well, who do we expose? You don't talk about that yet because we're expecting changes to happen this offseason. So who knows?
Someone you might say right now may not be there next season.
And the way I look at this too, I think David Poile might be on the verge, especially given some guys that might be available, of making some trades or really forcing some trades to happen to make sure a certain player is not taken. Now, granted, yeah, George McPhee basically saying, I'm going to get you back for Forsberg with Vegas. And nothing was going to happen there to make him revert back from that. So let's temper a lot of those conversations about that until at least we get through free agency with this team. And then we can start to really hypothetically look at this and go, which route are they going to go? The 7-3, the 8 overall, whatnot. So some of these changes I'd like to see made too is it's time to either do it or get off the pot for Elie Tolvanen, at least in terms of getting an opportunity. I'm not saying that he's a bust yet, because he was starting to turn it on in Milwaukee near the end of the season before the pause. But now I think it's time that you put him in this team, in this setup, to give him a chance to flourish, to see if he can learn under John Hines, who is a teacher coach. He had a year with Carl Taylor, and we saw with Carl Taylor being a great professor of the game that he started to flourish a lot better in Milwaukee. Now get him up to John Hines in the NHL. If it doesn't work out, trade him for something at the trade deadline. And then you at least know what you have, and you're not completely ruining his trade value.
Yeah. I love that idea. Now, I wrote for The Athletic sort of a little plan, and one of the things was Turris. And, you know, you can try to trade him, which I'm sure David Poile will, and has. But if you buy him out, you are going to save $4 million over the next 4 years. You're going to have to pay $2 million in each of those years. You have to pay $2 million another 4 years. You have to pay two-thirds of his deal. I still think that space that you gain is worth it. Again, unless it's like he is a top six guy for us moving forward and it's going to work out. If you believe that, then okay, stand pat. But to me, you've got to do something different with the second line. And I don't think you stashing, like doing what Laviolette was doing with Turris, which is basically just relegating him to occasional bottom six time.
Oh man,
you're paying him too much for that. I don't know. You tell me. Is that a smart idea to buy him out, or would you stick with him?
I would prefer that they look at other options, just because that can come back to bite you so much, especially with the flat cap coming in.
Yeah.
So even if you're having to eat less of the salary by paying part of it, say take $1 million out of it, and maybe a team will go for that by trading away a mid-level prospect with him or one of your mid-level draft picks or something like that to get something in return, even if it's like, oh, we're gonna give you a fourth round pick in return. That's more.
Than nothing. Sure.
And at least you're not having to pay that salary for that long of a period, because looking at the future, that could really affect this team, especially if ownership believes in spending towards the cap.
No, any sort of deal, I agree. Any sort of deal is preferable. I'm sort of acting on the assumption of everybody's going to be like, nah, thanks.
I'd be okay with it. I'd be okay with it because at this time, changes have to be made, and it's one of the options for a change. And he'd probably get signed somewhere else for less and still be getting paid, so he's making his money.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fine. And look, maybe I thought Turris did some good things. I thought of that line, he was the most noticeable.
He did score.
Yeah, that's right. He had what could have been the biggest goal of the series.
Right. All right, we're going to switch gears. Coming up in the next segment, time to switch to college football. We have Chris Doering of the SEC Network coming on to talk about everything in the college football landscape, especially the added two games, what's going on with the Power 5. Up next here in Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson behind the glass. And rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. And now, we're going to switch over to some college football talk because so much breaking news continues to happen, especially over the weekend. We're bringing in Chris Doering of the SEC Network. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and start off just what you've been having to hear and deal with since, say, Friday, and what's happened over the weekend, how much things have changed for you and what you're seeing develop just out of the Power Five right now.
Yeah, I mean, this last 72 hours is kind of a microcosm of what we've been dealing with as a society, as a planet since March. I mean, you feel good one day, and then, you know, that roller coaster of emotions kind of takes over. I couldn't have been more optimistic and excited on Friday night. Had a chance to do the SEC reveal show with Dari Noak on Friday evening, and just felt really good about where we were headed and that things were going to turn out at least to where we were going to give it a go. And then all of a sudden, with the Max announcement on Saturday morning and subsequently all the other rumors that started flying around Saturday and Sunday, it's looking less and less likely. So I'm still holding out hope. I'm a glass half full guy, but I am obviously expecting to hear some cancellations later on today.
And looking at this with the MAC and it being not the Power Five with the MAC, what is it, just the MAC that really trickled down everything to really kick things into gear? Do you think there were things going on before then that other conferences in the Power Five, not the SEC, were discussing that potentially this could be happening and it all just came to fruition over the weekend?
I don't know. It's so weird, isn't it? I mean, the Big Ten themselves just put out their schedule. They had a big announcement about how and when and where the games were going to be played earlier in the week. So, like, what changed between there and where we are today? I mean, I understand the MAC it puts a lot of pressure on everybody else, but at the same time, like, the MAC is in a much different situation than the Power Five conferences are. Not only are they dealing with the pandemic and the risks that go along with that, but they're dealing with losing out on a lot of those money games that they were slated to play, primarily against the Big Ten, but against some other Power Five conferences as well. The financial impact of that, the inability probably to test and have the same protocols that a lot of the Power Five conferences were able to have. So I do think it was an announcement that brought some light to the possibility of other conferences canceling the season. But at the same time, I do believe it was a much different situation for them than it is for the Power Five.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, Chris. You know, the MAC, like you said, first of all, there's a lot of financial implications to not having those games. And I've kind of thought for a while now that if we saw college football, we would see only Power Five college football this fall. And now, as you said, it doesn't look good. Sometimes I look at these things, and I know this isn't necessarily the intentional case, but I look at last night, it almost felt like a trial balloon. Like, what's the reaction now? There are some people that are trickling information out to reporters that it doesn't look good. So what is now the reaction? We've definitely seen a very strong vocal reaction from a lot of players to this. I guess my question for you, Chris, is do you see at this point right now any way that this changes and goes in the other direction?
Well, we had a chance to have Brett McMurphy on our show probably 10 days ago or so, and we asked him if there was one Power Five conference that would be most apt to cancel the season, who would it be? He said unequivocally it would be the Big Ten. They want to follow suit with the Ivy League. They want to have that moral superiority appearance, and I think that is very likely. I mean, they were the first ones to come out and say they were going to play a conference-only schedule, kind of going away from what we thought was going to be a solidified Power Five group together. So I don't think it would be surprising if they ended up at this point canceling their season. But again, what's the point in doing it right now? I think the SEC had a good plan pushing the season back to September 26th to buy themselves a little bit more time, to be able to watch what the NFL does, how they handle training camps, how they handle some of the first games of the season. McMurphy went on to say in his interview with us, like, if the Big Ten were to cancel, that he thought the Pac-12 would follow and probably every other Power Five conference except the SEC. I mean, there was talk from him and a belief that even if it was just the SEC that decided to play this year, they would be okay with trying to make that happen. And I would not be surprised to see them, even if everybody else cancels, at least give it a go, get a little bit closer. Let's see what's happened. Let's let some kids get back on campus if, in fact, they do decide to have school that way. And you know, let's play the plan out. I don't think there's any reason to audible yet at this point in time. And I think the groundswell of player support, the vocal nature of the social media over the weekend and how adamant they are about playing, I think there really are some good arguments that they put out very well. I thought Trevor Lawrence did a nice job of speaking about how it is actually a little more safe for them to be on campus with the medical professionals, the access to those folks, to have structure, to have, you know, the nutrition that they have. So it was nice to see that, which was a big swing from what we saw just a week earlier with the Pac-12 United message.
Yeah, in general, we're hearing a lot from, you know, from college football players, and I think they are finding their voice with a range of opinions. Just on your point there, Chris, about the SEC. So, and I think we may be talking a lot of hypotheticals soon again about college football. But so let's say that happens. The SEC plays. No, everybody else doesn't play. So are we talking, then you wait for everybody else to play in the spring and you have your playoff, like, you know what I mean? Like how does that work within finding a national champion, I guess?
No, we get another national championship to claim, man. It works out well.
Just means more.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I think, again, having – everybody said, you know, months ago that playing in the spring was a worst-case scenario, like a last-ditch effort to have a season. I think even if you push it back now, like, what's going to change? Again, you talk about hypotheticals. Are we going to have a vaccine by then? Are they going to have – you know, have we had more success with the NFL having their season, or the things that we can learn at that point in time? I think if you play in the spring, now all of a sudden you're going to be putting players at more risk, having to try to get them to play a season and then get a small break and then come back for the fall year. You're talking about putting two seasons in jeopardy at that point in time. You know, I have a hard time believing if they do cancel fall football that they're going to find a way to get it done. And even if they do, how many people are going to participate in the spring? I just, you know, there's going to be a very few, you know, that junior and senior class probably won't play at all. It'll be just a shell of what we were expecting to see here with the fall football.
And again, Chris Doering joining us of the SEC Network here on Morning Drive. Chris, looking at this as well, if there is a cancellation, it's the implications of what happens not only to these teams for the future, but for the players as well, especially junior seniors looking forward to their pro careers and what this season could mean for them, to these cities as well, to support college football and everything. What other steps do you think could be taken, at least if there is a cancellation, to help take care of these kids that are looking for this? This is their opportunity to go on and do something bigger and better for their lives.
Yeah, I don't even know what that possibility would be at this point in time. And you know, there's two things that I think that we should be thinking about when it comes to these players, these student-athletes. One is what you talk about, the ability to, you know, showcase their skills, to show the NFL what they're able to do. Guys like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, Ja'Marr Chase, those guys, they're going to go in the first round regardless if there's a season or not. But there's a lot of players that – very well could help themselves move up into the first round or second round and change their family's opportunity for the future. There's people that probably aren't even on the draft board right now that could go out and have a great season, that could make a name for themselves, to give themselves an opportunity to play at the next level. I think that's a very important aspect of it. But I also think just the experiential factor. You know, like I could tell you, for me, I played in the NFL for 9 years, but my years at Florida, my 5 years playing college football – were way better and way more memorable than what the NFL years were. And the opportunity to play with people that are all in the same stage of life, 18 to 22-year-old folks that are going through such a transitional period in their lives, there are a lot of lessons, there are a lot of things that are going to benefit these kids by playing football that they'll miss out on if they're not able to. So I do think as much as everybody's quick to want to do what's best for them, quote-unquote, with protecting them and their health, I do think there are some things that need to be thought about in protecting these kids and what's best for them in other aspects as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question there's an emotional, psychological component with, you know, high school athletes as well. I mean, it's, you know, this is a lot of the identity of these kids too. And, you know, you spend – I mean, I feel so much for – you think about these teams that have been out busting their butt in the heat in the last, you know, few weeks. And now you're seeing a lot of no one ever tells us what's going on. Now all of a sudden – you know, you're canceling it. And, of course, I think liability is from day one has always been to me a big part of this. You know, basically, you know, these university presidents are ultimately going to make the decisions, you know, conference commissioners too, but university presidents really making the decisions. And I think that that is all, that to me has always been the underlying, or maybe it's not underlying, it's the biggest thing is, yeah, is liability. But I guess my question for you, Chris, is what could have been done differently? We know that in society you're just sort of – you are sort of just hoping things get better out there with the virus. But
yeah,
is there anything that could have been done differently on the college side of things to plan, prepare, or change this outcome?
Yeah, I don't know that there is. And you're right. I mean, I think what we've dealt with here since March is a lot of – conflicting information. I think there's been a lot of guessing, and a lot of every time we think we know something, something else pops up or changes. So I don't know that the colleges, I don't know that there was anything that these athletic departments could have done differently. In all honesty, I think it's actually gotten better. I mean, think about in June when everybody got back on campus, when they started these workouts again, the numbers around the country, I mean, I think Clemson was at 37, 38 positive tests, LSU, Alabama, everybody was having these outbreaks that now seem to be under control. And I got to actually hand it to the players because I think they were a large part of what kind of changed. I think everybody initially got back. They thought, oh, everything's going to be okay. We're going to hang out the way that we used to. We're going to go do the things that we've always done as college students. And that caused a rapid spread of the virus. And I think since then, the numbers that have been reported around college football have been significantly lower, in a lot of cases down to zero. So they found a way to manage it. And I do understand that they're worried about what happens when the rest of the kids show up for campus. But I have a hard time believing they're even going to have on-campus classes anyway. So why can't we find a way to have the season? You know, everybody's going to go online. You got your athletes on campus protected, almost in a bubble-like situation. I actually think that's a much better opportunity for the season to be played as opposed to having everybody integrated back in when the general population returns.
Very, very good points made there, Chris. And I'm sure this is a situation we're going to be following every 30 minutes just on Twitter to see what gets broken here. We do appreciate your time, and thank you so much for your insight and providing that for us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Chris.
You too. Thank you. Chris Doering of the SEC Network, lots to discuss, and we're going to bring that up next and dive deeper into the college football landscape. Up next, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This last 72 hours is kind of a microcosm of what we've been dealing with as a society, as a planet since March. I mean, you feel good one day, and then, you know, that roller coaster of emotions kind of takes over. I couldn't have been more optimistic and excited on Friday night. Had a chance to do the SEC reveal show with Dari Noke on Friday evening, and just felt really good about where we were headed, and that things were going to turn out at least to where we were going to give it a go. And then all of a sudden, with the Max announcement on Saturday morning and subsequently all the other rumors that started flying around Saturday and Sunday, it's looking less and less likely. So I'm still holding out hope. I'm a glass half full guy, but I am obviously expecting to hear some cancellations later on today.
And welcome back. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexrode, and big thanks to Marquise Munson for getting Land of Confusion in there, because that's what we're in right now, Joe.
That it's fitting, and I had no idea that someone remade that Genesis brilliance, but that was all right.
It gets you going.
A little bit of a harder edge to it.
Yeah, it's a bump. It's a bump song. It's a
that's
great
right.
bump song.
Yes.
Yeah. So Chris Doering just joined us in the last segment and providing some insight to this, and it's changing by the hour, as it seems. I was scared to go to bed last night to see what I was going to wake up to say, we need to catch up on what we're going to talk about in the morning, because everything's changing and so many dominoes began to fall, even if they weren't necessarily connected, over the weekend of all this news. And Chris even mentioned too that SEC could be going alone because all conference schedules, things like that. Is that something that we expect that out of the Power Five? Because it seems like right now the Power Five is trying to do it all together. For the first time, they're trying to do everything together. Do we see the SEC potentially going alone?
Well, you know, it's ultimately, I don't think so. I think if the Big Ten does this, and it sounds like the Big Ten would be the first, like you said, maybe they'll be unified. But if I had to guess how it would go, it'd probably be the Big Ten first, Pac-12 next, and then what else do you guys have? I think if that happens, ultimately they would decide to do the same thing. Maybe it would take a while. I mean, it's sort of like the Big Ten put out the conference-only schedule, and some people are like, oh, the SEC is going to do that tomorrow. And it's like, no, you know, well, for one thing, I think the SEC leadership was not happy about that.
Right.
And, you know, they took their time, and they had a little bit different plan. I just, hey, imagine the idea of the SEC being the only league playing, and I guess, I don't know, I guess if that's the case, you could, you just, whoever wins the SEC wins a national championship? I don't know.
Well, right now, the NAI is still going to, like, schedules by conference is still going to happen. I mean, as the Cumberland University PA announcer, my plan is to still be in the booth come September, and there's going to be back-to-back games against the same team and everything, but is the NAI going to get a TV deal now?
Hey, well, we were talking in their break. Middle Tennessee is playing Troy twice, so right. They've sort of announced this revised schedule. If there's a total void,
right.
You know, this is a college game day in Murfreesboro and primetime game. You know, I mean, who will there still be some college football at the FBS level playing this fall?
And
I don't know.
And now, since folks love to complain that we don't talk about what the players are saying and what other people are saying, there is a big movement that we've seen coming from a lot of the players all across the nation, not just SEC and not just Trevor Lawrence as well, but, for instance, just put out by the Arkansas director of athletics, Hunter Yurecek, on behalf of the Razorback football team, that includes my son and each of the Arkansas Razorback student athletes that I represent, serve, support, care for, and fight for and love, hashtag we want to play. You're seeing a lot of people come out in support of being able to play. And then you even have the players standing together and issuing that big graphic that we've seen from representing the Power Five, the We Are United, We Want to Play, of what they're asking for in terms of the health and safety and the players an opportunity to opt out and respect their decision, guarantee eligibility, which is obviously really big, user voices to establish open communication as well, and representative of the players of all five power conferences is big. It's certainly sounding like a players' union,
right?
Of sorts. And that it brings into the whole question, too, of the amateur versus professional.
Sure.
And their likeness being used, the money involved, and everything like that. What I want your opinion, especially as a guy that's a fantastic columnist who is full of opinions, should college athletes be paid, and would that make a difference in this situation?
Well, yeah, no, this is the whole thing here is an illustration of this system that badly needs overhauling, right? And we're in the process of that with name, image, likeness, but we're also still getting Mark Emmert and even Greg Sankey. And I think Greg Sankey has been a good leader in some ways on this stuff, but in the name, image, likeness department, he's still arguing against it. They're still trying to make the case for why players should not have the right to benefit from their name, image, and likeness and being an open market. I've been screaming this for years, Justin. I mean, I remember when the Olympics, this is going to ruin the Olympics. You can't let these Olympic athletes get endorsements before. They need to be pros, and they're amateurs. And, get out of here. These are international stars of sport who that you know deserve to benefit from the incredible talent and hard work they put in, just like any other person in a free market. So that's long overdue, and I do hope that through all this stuff, and it's some really unpleasant stuff, that happens and there's a true open market. Because, you know, Matt Hayes put out an interesting tweet last night, and I retweeted it, but he quoted an administrator who said, you guys are missing the story here. Everybody's talking about, you know, obviously the season and the virus and you know, that is the biggest story in sports right now. But he said what this really is you know, basically this fear of administrators of players organizing and completely changing this system. And to me, you know, the idea that they would be employees, because you just can't do all the things that you can do with pro athletes. NFL teams, it's like, look, you better go home after practice, and we're going to have a bubble here for you, and you're going to go home because your paycheck's counting on it. And it's just not the same thing as college kids on a campus.
With just a scholarship, basically.
Right.
I don't say just a scholarship, but that's their incentive, is the scholarship, right? Money-wise.
Exactly. No, exactly. So, you know, according, again, Matt Hayes' tweet, presidents are terrified of players organizing. It's the paradigm shift to change amateur sports. To me, if you actually have a true open market with name, image, likeness, and it just let the market decide, and you stop worrying about, oh, well, then boosters are going to pay them to play. No kidding. Or there's just going to be a few schools with all the best players. Oh, well, that would be very different from now. I mean, there's all the argument. Or, like, players would be jealous. Or how are they going to handle the money? Again, a kid at Belmont right now can write a song for a college star, make $1 million, and no one cares. And they are continue to be a college student. I mean, Natalie Portman can be a Harvard student and make $20 million a film or whatever. I mean, it's why did these people not get to do that? And if you just change that, then I don't think you have to fundamentally change college sports. So I hope that results from this, but I think this has illuminated that. And right now, again, Justin, I just think liability is the if I had to put one word on this, that's what it is. And these presidents are terrified. Look, there's a lot of players speaking up right now. I'll also bring up a tweet from Houston defensive lineman Cedric Williams yesterday. He tweeted out a thing talking about how he has now had complications with his heart after testing positive for COVID-19 in early July. His quote was, "I really don't know the outcome or what's in store for me in the future." So this is another thing. People are going to take this and talk only about death rate for young people. And it's also not just young people around college programs. But that is a big thing. There are concerns about this. Science doesn't know anything about this virus yet. That's another thing that we've –
it's novel.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. So we're still learning things. And so when you think about the idea of what if you had a whole bunch of people who played this year and then had those complications down the road, again – What are presidents fearful of? What are college administrators fearful of?
Losing money.
Yeah, they're fearful of lawsuits. I mean, it's so, you know, I guess could you have some sort of comprehensive waiver signed by everyone? I would say probably a lot of players would sign it.
Mm-hmm. They would.
But that's the situation we're in right now.
And you say the waiver thing, too. There are plenty of lawyers that probably find a way to break that. I mean, they're going to have to hire the best lawyers to write a 100-page document signifying every loophole that could possibly be found, and there's still going to be a lawyer that's going to find a loophole.
Yeah, like that. There still will be people trying it if that's how it turns out. So,
which is the situation we're in, which is why it's so difficult on this because, yes, I totally understand the fact that players want to play. I mean, this is their potential livelihood. This is their getting their education as well, but having something further for their career for so many of them as well. But also, we have this virus we don't know enough about, and you have some that have tested positive and the implications of it that we might see 10 years down the road that we just don't know. So it is such a difficult situation. But yes, there are so many players that do want to play. There's coaches and staffs that want to play. There are some that are on the edge about it, and I'm sure they don't want to speak up necessarily. Just like with pros, there's been opt-outs, but that's the big thing too is why they're focusing on let them opt out if they want to without any repercussions.
Yeah.
Which is big.
And that will happen. You know, right. I mean, look, a lot of the things the Big Ten group put out there after the Pac-12 group, I mean, some of those things are in place, and all of them should happen. And I don't think that would be hard to get to that point at all. Again, it's just – and the question I have, Justin, and I don't know, I don't think we'll ever know the answer, is had the country gone in a good direction with the virus from late May and things looked good right now, the virus wouldn't be gone. It's not going to be gone.
Controlled.
But if it were controlled and things were – you felt okay, would it happen? Because you still could have that liability. You still have that uncertainty down the road with what could happen. I don't know the answer to that. But I know that once things started going the other direction, the likelihood just – it just shrunk. It's just the reality of it. And people were saying it, and people got killed for saying it. They weren't rooting for it. They were just saying, this is what people are telling me who are going to be making these decisions.
And the college football conversation came up in the spring. I mean, everybody was saying, well, how's this going to affect the fall? Looking that far ahead. I mean, this has been a discussion for months and months and months, and now we're finally getting to it when it's mid-August. Well, up next, we're going to continue this discussion with Corey Curtis from News 2. We're going to talk Preds with him and obviously what's going on in the college football landscape, all that. Up next here in Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.